I was in Edge, don't ask. And I just went to the title bar and searched and went, oh no, I've used Bing.
Run away.
What do I do now?
Searching on Bing is how to get away from Bing.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 28 for Friday, the 24th of October, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech, and I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, who broke the internet? Broadcom pulls the rug on everyone. Who's been breached now? And apparently, AI is not going to take your job. Find out in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
You know what, mate? I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. Some new toys, I hear. Some new toys. We'll find out all about it. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
Mate, I am fantastic.
Excellent. What have you guys been up to in the week? Any tech adventures? I know I saw some pictures floating around on our chat channel.
Buying all the things, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's Dave, a retail therapy time.
Dave's buying all of the stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's nice to be able to, like, scratch some itches, but I'm watching, like, just money just fly out the door and packages turning up. So I got my network cabinet for the new factory. We don't get in there for another 2 weeks when I'm sort of prepping a few things ready for, you know, sort of day one. I've got a Unify NVRs turned up because I'm going into the Unify sort of security and access ecosystem. I've had to go into the how to manage door controls, all sorts of things. Physical security is a bit of a new one for me.
Yeah, we delved into this the other day. You and I were having a bit of a chat about it and delving into just how much stuff Unify has got now.
Yeah, it's really wide.
Like, yeah, because I mean, you think of Unify and you go, oh, they're just network switches and access points and, you know, that and security gateways, and that's about it. But no, it's like they've got access control, they've got network storage, they've got UPS, they've got everything.
Yeah. They really do. They're going for the full stack now. I don't think there's too much. But I mean, like, they even run their own access system, so you can do, you know, it will tie in with Entro or Google Workspace if you need to. It can tie in with the Apple one as well. Like, you can use your contactless iPhone access with them.
Yeah, right.
So that's all pretty cool, because I'm stuck in a little bit of an awkward time, because there are new generations of products they've announced, like the G6 doorbell, or G6 Entry Pro,
yep,
which is kind of like a doorbell, but it's got some high-end cameras in it. It's got like a package camera, and it has the access like swiping badge on it.
Yeah,
you can't get it yet. So I want it, but I'm going to need something for sort of day one.
Yeah.
Same goes with, like, there's all new cameras, all the G6 cameras, which have the 4K sensors in them, versus the 1080 ones on the previous generation. And I want those. If I'm buying cameras, well, I might as well put the best ones in I can now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you're not replacing them in a year's time.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it's getting into a bit of like looking at like the office space and being like, okay, well, where do I actually need cameras? A, from like a physical security thing, but also like OH&S, like I probably should have some coverage in like the factory area and the office area. Like, what if someone falls down the stairs, for example, right? Like, so there's all sorts of different options that you can do. But it's also then the trade-off of like, well, yeah, but I don't want to have cameras, say, like, you know, looking at people's computers, right? I don't want to be micromanaging what people are doing. And I feel like if you point a camera at a thing, then the temptation is to watch the feed.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. No. I don't want to be that guy.
No. I mean, realistically, yeah, you should, for health and safety reasons, you should definitely have one watching the factory floor, and you should probably have one watching the front door, because, you know, that's the entry point and the roller door. And that's it in my head.
Yeah, like the other thing that I think we're going to end up at probably about six, but one will be, there's like, we've got parking spaces that are allocated but they're not directly at the front door. They're like just slightly down a little bit. So it's like, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll have a camera that faces over there, because the most likely thing that's going to happen in any industrial estate, it's not really going to be someone coming in, like breaking in and stealing, you know, or even stealing your car. The most likely thing to happen is going to be a truck backing up that backs into a car and then drives away.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Or
opportunistic thieves just walking past and throwing handles, you know, and just seeing something's open, you know, and reach in and pinch your sunnies or whatever.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, maybe what I'll do is I will have line of sight like from the front door. So maybe I can just point like a bullet camera at where the parking spots are, and then at least we've kind of got that as well. So
yeah,
it's a good idea. Yeah,
yeah,
nice.
Lots of things.
And Ian, you've got a couple of things written down here. What have you been up to?
I do. So I finished building Open Trickler. So Open Trickler is everybody knows that I like shooting competitively. So I reload my own ammunition, and one of the things that you sort of you get to needing when you're reloading the amount of ammunition that I shoot every week is an electronic way of trickling in a very precise amount of powder.
Mm.
And so you can buy an off-the-shelf thing. It's about $2,500 to buy. Very, very good product. The bloke who makes it is phenomenally smart. But there's an open-source version that you can 3D print. And with some off-the-shelf parts and a little bit of know-how and some screws, you can build this open trickler. And I got it finally dialed in last night that it was throwing exactly the right amount of powder, or just a touch under, every single time for 100 rounds. So I was pretty stoked with that. It took a long time to build. There was a lot of mistakes I made in the printing and the assembly and the software that goes on it and all the rest of it. But yeah, open trickler works.
So does it pack the shells as well, or is it just for the weighing?
No. So it doesn't pack the shell. All it does is throw that amount of powder into a little cup.
Oh, I see.
And then you've got to put it into the cases yourself.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's your next step, right? You need a
So you can get a hydraulically actuated press that will press the projectile into the case. For you with the same amount of pressure every single time. But that, again, that's a lot of money.
Right. Is there another open source version of that?
Probably.
Yeah.
So how do you assemble it then? You've got the powder. What are you doing with the powder then?
So then you pour that through a funnel into the case. So I've got a long drop funnel because I've got a fairly hot load. So I use the cup and tip that into the top of the funnel, and it drops down into the case, and then I put a projectile in it and seat it.
Okay. And then do you have the press? The press it all together?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
I've got a little arbor press that you use your fingers on instead of a big bench press.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
I'm kind of picturing like if you've ever done like home brewing when you have to put the bottle caps on there.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I started, was one of those, a big bench style press, big Lee press. And look, they're good, but you tend to overthrow or overpress a projectile in, because they've got so much momentum behind them, they just don't stop. Whereas the little arbor press that I've got now with the Wilson dies, it presses and it's got a hard stop on it.
Right, okay.
So, and you can set it, there's little a micrometer dial on the top of it so that you can hard set it to 1/1 of an inch. So it's, it really, really accurate. And that's a sort of
Ian's artisanal rounds.
it's nothing fancy. Like what I'm doing is the most basic of hand loading at the moment, because some of the stuff that the guys that I shoot with do, like just in case prep alone, is a week worth of work.
I'm sort of picturing like, you know, actually getting the rounds, polishing them, you know, getting them with the wet and dry just to make sure that they're perfectly
smooth. Grave your name on them, you know.
So there's the point at the front.
Deny, defend, oppose.
The point at the front called the meplat of a projectile. Lots of guys actually do repoint that. So you can get a repointing jig for it that will take the round that sort of sits like a V and sharpen the top point so that it's perfectly conical. And then there's other things like we weigh projectiles. As they come out of the box, they will be different weights and you split them up into 0.05 batches so that you're not putting a projectile in that weighs 154.5 grains and another one that's 156 grains.
Right, because the sights would be set differently.
Yeah, because they're different weights. Yeah. They're going to fly differently. There's all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so when you're shooting, it's consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're aiming for the most consistent projectile you can. Yeah,
that's Olympic level stuff. Right there.
No, it's this is basic level stuff.
Wow.
It gets so much more complex than this.
I guess like any hobby, the deeper you go into it, you start chasing those incremental gains where they get just progressively more expensive. It's like chasing that extra 9 of availability.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So and the I mean, shooting is it's a phenomenal sport that I know. It's a fairly polarizing topic, but it is a really, really safe sport. It's one of the most safe sports in the world. But it's one of those sports that the further you get into the rabbit hole, the more you realize how deep the rabbit hole is.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. No, very good.
All right. Well, I mean, you could say, my sport's karate and we actually trained to hurt and kill people. So, we've got that going for us. But and it's pretty safe as well. So it's funny that. I did a couple of things during the fortnight. I said last fortnight I was going to sit the Gen AI Leader certificate, and I did that and I passed.
Yay!
Yes, thank you. Non-technical certification, pretty straightforward. The exam experience was similar to the digital cloud leader. You've got 2 hours to do it. I went in and I smashed out the entire thing in about half an hour and then went back and reviewed all the questions. That took about 15 minutes and I was done in about half the time.
Nice.
Just under half the time.
I really like those like the cloud digital leader and the Gen AI leader certs as a way to kind of introduce people to the Google ecosystem, but also kind of pump priming them on if you're going to do the other certs, like getting back in. If someone hasn't studied for a while, I think they're a great way to like, hey, go do this. Get your, because the ACE is a bit harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's to introduce you to the experience of, going in, sitting down, doing the exam and, you're feeling the exam pressure and getting through it. I just did the cloud skills boost stuff. It's pretty straightforward. Get through that, which, by the way, I don't know if either of you have gone on the cloud skills boost. It's been had a total facelift.
Yes.
And the partner DRI, partner delivery readiness index, which what we use behind the scenes to get our scores and stuff, it feeds back to Google to let us know our accreditations. That's had a full facelift as well, and the two integrate together quite nicely now.
Yep. Yeah. So it's been renamed from Cloud Skills Boost to Google Skills.
Google Skills. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
And they've gamified a whole bunch of things, and you've got streaks and all that stuff now as well.
It is cool.
It's cool, really good. So, this is one of the ones that I said to you a couple of weeks ago. There's some really cool things coming out for Skills Boost, but I'm not allowed to talk about them.
I'd been getting emails saying it's going to be offline. There's going to be an upgrade, but then they kind of turned everything back on and it was just kind of broken for a while, and then suddenly everything's lit up and it's all working again. So
I have a bunch of achievements I need to claim. Ooh.
Yeah, you got to claim your achievements.
I'm claiming them now.
That's a bit of fun. Now I just hope they fix one thing that does annoy me, and that is if they rev a course, You complete a course and you get the check mark that says course completed. And when you see it in the dashboard, it says course completed. Now, if they've revved that course, there's no indication that's been revved until you go back into it, and then it pops up a banner at the top saying this course has been updated. Would you like to get the updated course? And you go, of course I'd like to get the updated course. So you get it and you enable it. And then if you look through the modules, you'll still have the green tick against the modules, and the ones they've updated, you don't have the green tick against. However, the course status remains completed. A little bit weird. It's like, well, why didn't that now go back to incomplete or partially completed? I don't know why they've decided to do it that way. So that was fun. Go and do that one and learn yourself all about AI. But I saw, while I was just sniffing around on the internet, I saw a good price on a RTX 5070 Ti.
Ooh.
And I splashed out and got myself one.
Well, it's a business expense, right? You need that for local LLMs.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the accountant did tell me to spend some money on tech too. You know,
Bitcoin mining.
Not on GPUs anymore, man.
Look, but the only problem is that the card is a little bit longer. It's a three fan one.
Oh, right.
So I had to swap a few things around in the case in order for that to work properly. But it's in there now. And, the games I've been playing, my G-Sync display does 144 FPS, no problems.
Yeah.
Does it easy. And the load on the GPUs, running about 50%. Whereas before, the 3070 couldn't, it was just almost maxed out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, my 3080 is starting to feel long in the tooth, which, I know they're a few years old now, but damn, that was a great card. But playing BF6, I've had to turn the graphics settings down a bit.
Yeah. But I was thinking back the cards I had that prior to that, I had the GTX 980, and boy, that thing had some long legs. I had that for a long, long time. And I was playing War Thunder on that until I went to the 3070, and the 3070 hasn't lasted nearly as long as that 980 did.
Yeah, right. And here I am. I'm like, I've got the best graphics card in the world.
Integrated
graphics all the way, bro.
System on a chip, bro. System on a chip.
That's it. It's the future of the world.
That's all you need. But now I probably should try running some LLMs on there. That'd be bit of fun.
Yeah.
But speaking of outages, it's not really a segue, but anyway, no. That's right. Boy, oh boy, wasn't there a whopper of an outage during the week? Amazon, US East 1, DNS resolution, DynamoDB, we've all heard the stories, gone.
Yeah.
Just over.
Yeah, I couldn't dispatch anything while it was down because it killed ShipStation for me.
Yeah, right. Did we all know that the US East is actually the oldest and the biggest region in AWS?
It was
the OG, yeah.
Yeah.
And like the default that was selected every time, like if you were spinning up anything, it was the first one that was always there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff in there, a lot of dependency on that. Despite what they say.
Yeah, but it's also, it becomes, there's things that are in there, and then it's the things that depend on those things, and the things that depend on the things that depend on the things that...
Yep.
Yeah.
And the chain just keeps going.
Yeah. But look, I got to be critical of like the media and the way this sort of got put out, And this is just in the vernacular. The internet was broken. It broke the internet. The internet was down. No, come on. It wasn't the internet. All your shitty apps that are on the internet were the ones that were down. Your Snapchats and your TikToks Roblox. And all that.
Yeah.
Roblox. Like, come on, guys. That is not the internet, right? We can go back to raw dogging it with Gopher and IRC if you like.
Oh, my God. I haven't heard of Gopher for yonks. Yeah.
The internet's fine.
Yeah, the internet's fine. And AWS carries a very small portion of the internet.
Oh, well, the thing is, I think they're saying something like 30% of the internet traffic, like the apps and things, are dependent on AWS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would sound reasonable.
Yeah. And, I saw some video, like something like 50% is like bots and malware, and then another 30% is AWS, and the rest is everyone else, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Because you start getting things like Docker Hub will be down, and then all of a sudden everything that relies, everything that pulls containers all the time is gone, no matter where it is.
Well, because AWS had a, or Docker had an issue years and years and years ago with their container registry, and that was why Google forked their registry and made their own, because you know you can't have Kubernetes not being able to deploy containers just because Docker's down. I seem to recall that from years and years ago.
Good times, everyone.
Good times.
I'm glad that I wasn't on the hook for trying to bring that one back, though.
Yeah, that's it. Speaking of providers. Now, there's a segue.
Speaking about being on the hook.
Yeah, being on the hook, all right. I built a thing. So I built a Terraform provider for inter-VLAN routing in NSX.
Oh, right, yes.
Because it is not covered by the NSXT provider at all in any way, shape, or form. So I just built one. And we're currently using it in non-prod on the project that Dave and I are on. And we had a little issue yesterday where the docs say that your attachment ID should be this string, and that's wrong. It shouldn't be that string, or maybe it's some of the characters that we've got in the segment names that are causing it to die. But we got it all working yesterday, and we've got traffic flowing.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's super nice. I mean, the fact that we've been able to now have that. So if somebody changes a firewall or a load balancer, it's like really, really quick to reinstate all of these interfaces.
Yep.
Whereas previously you had to do it all via API calls and just awful. If you've got, you got a server that's plugged into a trunk port and then it's connected to 200 VLANs behind it, you would have to go create 200 ports every time.
Yeah. Aww. And if you change, and this happened, one of the guys changed a NIC from one segment to a different segment and back again, assuming that changing it back would reinstate the previous segment ID or attachment ID, but it doesn't. It regenerates a new UID every single time. So the provider just goes in and goes, hang on, this segment ID is wrong. I'm just going to patch it. And it patches it right there and then, and it's done. So unintended consequence of the way I coded it. I didn't plan for that, but it works.
But you're owning it.
I am owning it. I'm owning it. It's mine. I did it deliberately. No, that's complete nonsense. But yeah, so it's out. It's running. It's in version 0.0.7. Or 0.0.70, actually, not 7. It took me more than 7 goes to get it right. But yeah, it works, and you can literally do parent and child segment ports in Terraform now really simply.
You're going to have to bump that thing up to version 1 soon.
Yep.
Excellent.
Once we've got it in prod, I will definitely do that.
Mm. And just give us a link to that and I'll chuck it in the show notes.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah, cool. One last item here to finish off the banter. Sasha Nadella's pay tops 96 mil. As Microsoft stock soars. And the Walmart CFO is set to join the board. This is outrageous.
It is crazy.
I mean, it's astonishing, right? It's really... really astonishing.
And meanwhile, they've laid off 15,000 employees this year.
Yep. Because reason. I just saw this one the other day and I was just like, holy crap, how does this dude get paid so much money? He's gone up 22%.
Well, now, in fairness to Satya, right? His salary is a measly $2.5 million, and you just can't survive off that.
$2.5 million
US dollars. It doesn't go very far. It's like inflation.
$50 Australian, isn't it?
Yeah. So on the side, maybe he gets $85 million worth of stock awards.
Well, this is the thing. It's based on the performance of the stock, which has risen more than 23% in the past year.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting looking at the table of the breakdown, right? Because you got his salary is $2.5 million. There's stock awards, as we said, 85. non-equity incentive plan compensation. So
just another, you know, 10 mil.
Yeah, just a sneaky 10 mil. But then all other compensation, it's like, I don't know, under 200K, right? It's a little small. It's a small thing. It's a measly $200,000 in all other compensation. I bet that's like his mobile phone plan.
Yeah. You know,
it'll be that stuff. It's going to be, well, it wouldn't be security detail. That'll be a company expense. But
yeah.
But it's all the nice stuff. Maybe it's his car allowance.
200K a year for a car.
Bloody but hell. In 2023, it was 48 mil.
Mm.
2 years later, nearly double that. He's double that, 96 mil.
Yep.
Like, staggering.
Yeah, so look, he's evidently doing something right at Microsoft, but that it's an awful lot of dollars to be paying one single human being.
Oh, it's awful. Really, like, you know, not just him, but like the whole CEO salary inflation stuff across the board is insane.
Yeah. The thing that I sort of don't agree with is when CEOs lay off large swaths of their staff, or they make that decision to do that, and then go, oh well, look, we're performing so much better, we'll give ourselves a pay rise.
Mm.
That doesn't sit right with me.
Well, none of them got bonuses, if you look at that.
Oh, yeah. No, poor little babies didn't get their bonus on this $85 million stock award.
Yeah, I was going to say, and $9.5 million worth of other compensation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, didn't get a bonus. Diddums.
Well, all right. With that out of the way, we've got some more news coming up later in the show. But right for now, let's get on with the community news. All right, Ian, take it away.
DevFest, it's kicking off all over the country. So GDG Brisbane has DevFest on the 25th of October, which is on Saturday. Starts at 9:30 in the morning. You can get tickets to it on the community site. It's at UQ Brisbane in the city, in Queen Street. Get along to that. It looks like it's going to be a cracking little event. Next one up is Sydney Meetup. For November is happening on the 5th of November at 4:30 p.m. at the Mandel Group office in George Street in Sydney. Again, they've got a really good lineup here. The first talk they've got here is Zero Trust with Identity as a New Perimeter. And the next talk they've got is Real-Time Job Analysis, I should say. Speaking in the English, Ian. Using Gemini as a Chrome extension. That looks like an interesting talk that I'd love to be at. Next one, GDG Melbourne's October meetup. Again, Mandel Group head office in Flinders Street, October 29th at 5 p.m. They've got a great lineup of speakers and networking. Melbourne always puts on a fantastic event. Fine-tuning LLMs for query understanding with Vertex AI. Let's Brew KMP by Katie and Practical Web AI with Phil Nash. GDG Canberra, we don't hear from Canberra very often, but they're doing their DevFest AI and Cloud Solutions at Canberra Innovation Network on the 20th of November at 5 p.m. I know it's a little bit away, but RSVP to it so you can get tickets while they're available. And again, it's a DevFest. It's going to be a cracking little event. And last but not least, Perth. Now, I can never pronounce the name of this place. The Mia Yala Gonga place. It's in Spring Street in Perth. They're doing the DevFest over there on the 7th of November at 7:30 p.m. So get along to that one. And again, they're great little events. And that's all awesome. I got.
Lots on, mate.
Yeah.
Lots on all over the country. So get out to those. All right. Well, with that done, let's get on with the news items. And first news item this week is our old favourites, Broadcom.
I really feel like we should have the Darth Vader music on right now. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Yeah.
Oh, of course, dear. this news is probably known to a few of our listeners already, but the Broadcom licensing period has expired. Yeah. You can no longer get a license via a hyperscaler. You must now go directly to Broadcom to buy your license.
Yeah. So you can't do it through GCVE. You can't do Azure VMware solution or any of those. You can't get your licenses that way. However, you could. We did touch on this last fortnight that this was coming imminently. In the fortnight that's expired, or the past, it has now expired. But man, that was some frantic times trying to get CUDs in place, because you didn't actually have to have your nodes stood up. You just had to have the CUDs that would allow Google to buy the licenses. So on the project we're on, and we know quite a few other GCVE installations out and around the country that were all frantically re-upping their CUDs.
Yep. Resetting their CUD time. Yeah, that's right. The project I'm on at the moment, that's what they did.
Yeah. So I am going to bet that Google's Q4 numbers, because the numbers that I heard from people what they were signing in CUD deals like on October 14th and 15th, like what they were having to get done. And for a lot of people, a lot of companies, they're having to do the 3-year full upfront commit.
Yeah.
Right. So think of how much front loaded spend just happened in October now.
Mm. That's what the project we did. It did it for non-prod and prod.
Yep. Because otherwise the option was you had to go to Broadcom.
Yeah. And we don't let friends deal with Broadcom.
We don't.
Friends don't let friends deal with Broadcom.
So yeah, I reckon the Q4 numbers are going to have a big spike up. It's going to be really rough actually for any of the pre-sales and sales guys, anyone especially who's measured on VMware engine sales, because it's going to be hard for them to match Q4 2025 for a while.
Oh yeah.
If ever, because I mean, it's only going in one direction.
Yeah, that's right.
People I'm talking to are saying we want to get out of it as quickly as possible.
Yep. And look, now that Broadcom has pulled the rug of licensing out, GCVE is now an infrastructure as a service. That's all it is.
Correct. Yeah, you're just buying tin.
You're just buying the tin now. And Google gets to manage that tin, and they'll still patch it all and all that sort of stuff for you, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you still get your service, your single point of call for service and support.
Yep. But it means that you have to go to Broadcom now and buy your VCF licenses directly from them, which means that you're paying whatever they want you to pay as opposed to whatever Google pays in volume.
Yeah. So, interesting. It was interesting being at the kind of the coal face on this one and down to the wire, with hours to spare before you were not going to be able to order them anymore. Yeah. We got that done. So
interesting notes that I found in this article actually is that Tan, the CEO of Broadcom, highlighted that more than 90% of VMware's 10,000 largest customers have signed up for VCF platform and the accompanying subscription since the plan changes were put in. It's a slight increase in what he said during the previous earnings call. So the previous earnings call said 87%. This one says over 90%. But then Gartner has recently stated that VMware is going to lose 35% of its workloads to hyperscalers by 2028.
Yeah, I mean, I think both things can be true.
Oh, I definitely think that. But it's I was really surprised at how. Because we've done GCVE migrations where the plan was you do the migration and then we migrate off VMware as fast as possible into cloud native.
That should be the plan, yeah.
And that doesn't happen because we've got the thing here, it works, leave it alone.
Yep.
We're off the burning platform, so all of a sudden, 3 years, it's got plenty of time. Yeah, all of a sudden, I've got this other project that I have to do.
We'll tackle that a month out from the 3-year mark.
Till 3 months, right. Till 3 months, it comes up. Oh, hang on, we've got to renew these licenses. We're going to do something about it now. Yeah, look, I mean, that's just corporate, I don't know, what's the word I'm searching for? Not laziness, just lethargy.
Well, it's priorities lackadaisical as well.
Yeah. But it's, I was very surprised at Gartner's prediction of 35%, because we know that of the projects that we've done, they're not really moving out of VMware.
Yeah.
Yet.
Mm. So maybe this will be the kicker to get people out of VMware and into insert different hypervisor here.
I guess the problem is a lot of the apps that are in VMware, they tend to be monolithic, they tend to be legacy, they tend to have huge dependencies on the Microsoft ecosystem. It's very difficult to break that down to microservices and migrate it into a modernized cloud CI/CD pipeline design, right?
Well,
it basically requires a re-architecture.
That's exactly right. And speaking of Microsoft, we found out a nice little tidbit the other day was you can't run Office on a VDI inside of Google's ecosystem.
What?
Yep.
Licensing.
The reason. Licensing explicitly calls out that you cannot run it in AWS or Azure or, AWS or Google or Alibaba clouds.
Surely that's anti-competitive.
Oh, yeah.
There's cases around it.
Yep. They're going to court in the EU about it, but
yeah,
but it literally calls out, because the project that we're on, they're like, well, what are we going to do about Office licensing, because we're not allowed to run it in Google? Like,
what? LibreOffice,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's been so promising for so long, but yeah, just doesn't quite
and
deliver.
So disappointing every time. Yeah. I use FreeOffice. FreeOffice it looks very Microsoft Office, and it reads and writes Microsoft Office files much better than LibreOffice does.
So does LibreOffice, well, it claims to.
Yeah, but it doesn't. And FreeOffice does. So I don't know how it goes with really complex ones, but
even Workspace, Google Works, what are they calling it now?
Workspace.
You preview a doc file.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've ever noticed this. You got a doc file in Drive and you click the thing and it brings up the preview. It looks perfect.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, yeah, this is great. You open it in the doc and it's completely munged.
Yep.
It's like, what?
Yeah, yeah. What the heck happened here?
Yeah. How? What? Was something happened between the preview and the actual opening?
Yeah.
Please explain.
Coded by different teams.
Yeah.
Preview teams on point. Like. I mean, I have to say, though, it's on the VMware side of things, I'm actually now giving some serious consideration to sitting my, getting my VCF cert. So years ago I had the VCP DCV, data center virtualization, which is like the sort of standard sort of virtualization stack one.
Yep.
But now, because VCF is so many more pieces than just the virtualization, it's obviously virtualization and it's vSAN and it's NSX and it's ARIA and it's the building and operating of all of those systems. I think it's time for a bit of a refresher.
Yep.
And one nice thing that Broadcom has done is it used to be if you wanted to sit a VMware cert, you had to do the course. And the course was $4,500. Right. So if you wanted to be allowed to sit the exam, and if you did the course, you got a free exam cert, exam voucher, you know.
$200 cert.
Yeah. But now, as long as you've sort of done some training, so you reckon you could pass it, you can go and give it a crack.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give that a go. I reckon I might sign up for VMUG and then go do the cert. And then if you pass it, you actually get a personal use license for VCF.
Mm.
Yeah, you do.
That's
right.
So
I've been dancing around that idea as well. I got VMUG membership, but it's just time, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I maintain all my other certs.
I'm very time poor as well. I've been looking at it going, am I actually going to be able to dedicate the time and effort to actually doing this cert?
Yeah.
And the answer is probably not.
Yeah, for me, I'm just thinking, like, I think I have to make the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing enough of it in a professional context. I'm sure there are places that could be fleshed out a bit more, and doing the training would be ideal, I think.
Yep.
All right. Well, look, we'll keep across what's going on with those guys, but it's just a money grab, in my opinion. But anyway, moving on. The Google says Australian law on age verification extremely difficult to enforce. Well, we could have told them that.
Yeah.
6 months ago. Google said it would be extremely difficult for Australia to enforce a law prohibiting people younger than 16 from using social media, warning the government's initiative would not make children safer online. Opinions?
Agreed. 100% agreed. You're not gonna keep kids offline.
No, I know. But
you're not gonna keep them off social media. They will find another way around. It's exactly the same way. The same as this nonsense firewall that the government put in place to block pirating sites. All they did was move the pirating sites and people went, oh, well, I can just host file the IP address of said site on my local machine and I can go to it via its name again.
Yeah, or you just switched to a different DNS that wasn't in the country.
Yeah, that's right.
Different DNS, yep.
There was a myriad of ways around it. Yeah, my young fella is already like, oh, I can just use a VPN and be in America and move my profile to America before this all happens and I'm fine.
Like, and you're fine.
Where I come down on it is that we know how social media is, right? And
this
kids
is true. Yep.
Shouldn't be on it, right? So now I'm not saying that a technical solution is like the ideal way to approach it, but they shouldn't be. Most adults shouldn't be on it.
No.
Right?
Oh, like,
you can see what it has done to civil discourse, right?
It's a
toxic product and we should be trying to keep people away from it.
It's complete brain rot.
Yeah, so I come at it more like these companies, the companies that actually then profit from our kids being on there because the kids become the product. And in the case of Roblox, like, you know, stuff like that, where it's like they have considerable issues with protection of children that they don't really seem to care about fixing.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of coming down of like, we do need to have some regulation around it, even if it's so we have a stick to whack companies with. That's where I come on it. Like, kids, I was a kid. I was always finding my way into things I wasn't supposed to be doing as well.
Yep.
That's always going to happen. But we should be able to at least say to companies, you aren't allowed to have these users on there, right? It's on you to prevent the exploitation of children.
And we've had that sort of stuff for ages. Like Facebook has mandated a minimum age there for yonks. Kids get around it the same way as adults get around rules all the time. We're creative creatures in finding ways around the rules.
Yeah, sure. They may find their way around, but I tend to agree with Dave's point where at least we've got something in place that we can, you know, wave the stick, the proverbial stick. We can wave at these companies to say, you're not doing enough. You should be doing more, right?
No, I 100% I agree with that. I also think it's a parent's responsibility to regulate that. It's not the government's. It's not the government shouldn't be stepping in to do anything like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a parent's responsibility to raise your child in a manner that you think is right.
Mm.
And if you think that your child should be allowed to be on social media, then that's your choice. I don't particularly like my son being on social media, and he is. I am friends with him on every social media account. It's the one rule I have. You're on social media, I must be friends with you. And if I'm not on that social media, neither are you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And only because I black hole all those DNSs too. So can't get around it inside here because you can't query it inside here.
I hope you tar pit the VPN connections as well because you can just go around it.
Yep. Yeah, I've got in my DNS, I've got a black hole for all VPN providers. It's great. And they update that list every week. So that list just constantly gets revamped.
Yeah, until you find out their son has spun up a VPS somewhere and he's running WireGuard off it.
If he's done that and he's gone to that level to get around, then, mate, you go for it.
It's like, fine, okay, fine.
You have shown determination and creativity to get around a problem, and I applaud you.
Yep. Yeah. Also, can I get on your WireGuard, please?
Also, give me access to WireGuard.
I think that it's controversial, and how's it going to work? They're saying here that they've got to show how it's going to work.
I don't see how they're going to enforce it without enforcing a digital ID. And I will veto a digital ID until the day I die, because the government's already proven that they can't keep data safe. So why should I give them any of my data to start with?
And they're using AI, and they're going to infer the age. So nothing could go wrong with that.
No, nothing's ever gone wrong with AI.
No.
Of Salesforce.
Yeah, I've seen, I think like Discord had done like an age verification thing, but things like masks work, but also like some character creators in some video games. So people, it'll be like, okay, point the camera at yourself, and then it'll be like, smile. And so you'd point it at the game creator, and then you make the character smile.
Yeah.
It works.
Yep. Or you could just have one of those Happy Gilmore masks, you know, and put that in front of your face.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just see how that pans out. But in the meantime, our friend JK, Private Buckets with CDN for serving public assets. If you're not doing this, then you should be doing it already.
Yeah, look, this is a really, really cool article. And shout out to JK, because he's found an undocumented feature on how this works, because it doesn't work. It's not documented to work natively in GCP. So you can't have a private bucket and then put a CDN in front of it. Normally, your bucket needs to be public. And we all know that security individuals don't like anything that starts with the word public. Because reasons. Generally, those reasons include ISO or SOC or some other security certification. But what he's found is an undocumented feature where you can actually make this work with a little bit of tomfoolery. So what you do is you set up your private bucket, and then you create a service account with a storage object's get permission, and then you create a HMAC key, the old school HMAC keys that S3 uses. You'll create a backend load balancer, but instead of choosing a bucket as the backend, you choose an internet neg. And then from there, you can go into the configuration and choose HTTPS as the protocol, and then put your private origin authentication HMAC keys in. And then the last little bit of this is a little bit tricky, because essentially what happens is when you call that CDN that then passes back to the load balancer, it goes to the bucket. The bucket's going to go, oh, hang on, that's not my host name. Go away. So what you've got to do is go into the load balancer and do custom request headers, so that you munge the host header to be the storage bucket header, or the storage bucket's name, and then it works. Now there's some queries here that the JK's raised very, very thoughtfully, actually, is egress costs. So do you pay for them twice, because you're paying for a public bucket egress and maybe CDN egress? So which one do you pay for, or do you pay for both of them? Because we all know that the CDN egress is actually more expensive, is cheaper than the storage bucket egress, because the storage bucket egress comes out at the normal, I think it's 19 cents a gig rate in Australia, whereas I think CDN is, it's either 12 or 15 cents a gig. Gemini, he put this question to Gemini, and Gemini said, no, you only pay for it once, you get the CDN pricing. But that's not clear anywhere. But it is a really good solution. Even if it does cost you a little bit more to run, your security people are going to love it. So have a look at the article and work your way through it. I have done it, and it does work. It just takes a little bit of setting up.
Yep. Bit of jiggery pokery and you're done.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cool idea. Nice bit of tinkering there by JK to get that to work. And just keep that one in your back pocket. All right. Speaking of Gemini, Gemini Enterprise.
And now we get on to the Google Gemini show.
We get on the Google Gemini show. Gemini Enterprise are apparently going gangbusters. I put a couple of articles in there. Article from Cloud Wars saying Google Cloud rockets to number one for AI for business with Gemini Enterprise. I don't know. What do you guys think? You're using Gemini. You're using Enterprise, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah, I haven't been able to quite work out what Enterprise gives me over the current product.
And that's the problem I had reading these articles. Yeah. It's like, what are we getting with Enterprise? But I'd imagine it's the suite of integrations with Gemini, right? Into Docs and Sheets and all the rest.
Yeah, what we've got a list later on in the episode that actually has a whole heap of AI things that comes with Enterprise, which is a whole heap of agents and integrations all over the place.
Okay, so it's more just like I haven't worked out how to consume it yet.
Yeah, so you can literally have Gemini working across your Google environment, so Google Workspace, for instance. You can have it working inside of Azure. You can have it working inside of AWS. You can have it working inside of Office. It just integrates with everything.
Right. Do we have a list of tools or agents that are available?
Well, there's in the list later on in the article, in the AI Wars, we might have some information on that.
We might have a bit more information on that. Spoilers. But it's nice to know that finally Google's getting, you know, they've always been sort of the bride's, you know, the bridesmaid, never the bride. And we're starting to now see the benefits of their input and the work that they've done.
I was going to say one of the key things I think that Gemini Enterprise gives you over just the normal Gemini, apart from its like stupid amounts of integrations, is your centralized governance framework. So it actually says in the article here, companies can visualize, secure, and audit all their agents from one place, which is, I think that's probably a big boon for this.
Yep. It says that Gemini Enterprise can securely connect your company's data wherever it lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about pulling it all together, right?
Yep.
From Google Workspace to Microsoft 365 to business applications like Salesforce and SAP. We'll get on for the list. We'll just give it the mention there for the moment. We'll get on to the list. But for now, let's get on with some security news. Qantas. Qantas in some hot water.
Yes.
Qantas has customer data released by cyber criminals. Story on IT News.
Yeah, so look, their Salesforce environment was broken into. It says in the article here that the hackers use social engineering techniques to get access to Salesforce. And the hacker collective Scattered Lapsus Hunters is behind the data release. And that occurred because the ransom deadline that was set by the group had passed, and they, true to their word, they released the information they had.
Mm.
Now, it says that more than 1 million customers had sensitive details, so phone numbers, dates of birth, home addresses, and another 4 million had their names and email addresses taken. So that's a little bit concerning because that's when you correlate that with a whole heap of other hacks that have had their data released.
Yeah,
you start building a database of everybody's personal information.
Everybody in Australia, and that's not a lot of people, right? Like,
no,
let's just say everyone in Australia has had their data exposed at this point.
Yep,
between Optus, Medicare, and Qantas, we're done.
Yeah,
the whole country's cooked.
Yeah, that's right. Now, they are one of a number of companies that's had the data released by these criminals since the Salesforce platform was compromised. So, look, they're not the only ones in this hot water, but they're certainly the biggest one in Australia that is.
And speaking of embarrassing hacks and being in hot water, What if you what if you were, you know, you touted yourself as a security company and you, you know, you were in charge of protecting other people's networks? Like, ooh, I don't know, F5? And then you got hacked?
Surely that would never happen.
Wouldn't that be bad?
But I mean, surely it was only a short time hack. Like, someone was in and they got busted because they got great security.
Yeah, no.
Well, what if it was like 12 months?
Yeah.
Well, then that would be bad. That would be very embarrassing.
It would be very embarrassing.
F5 disclosed that unidentified threat actors broke into its systems and stole files containing some of its big IP source code.
Including a whole bunch of undiagnosed vulnerabilities. Oh, yeah.
It learned of the incident in August 9, 2025, although it believed the hackers were in its network for at least 12 months.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
The hackers used a malware family called Brickstorm, which has been attributed to a China Nexus espionage group, which has been dubbed UNC5221. And Census has said that it identified over 680,000 F5 big IP load balancers and gateways that are visible on the internet.
Yeah.
With the majority of hosts located in the US, followed closely by Germany, France, Japan, and China.
Yeah. Now, and the source code is out in the open.
Now, the another article that I read that I have since lost in the chaos that has been this week, says that a lot of those US F5s are government ones.
Which is probably why this was suppressed for quite some time.
Yeah. Mm. That sort of starts becoming a little bit clearer. There's a call out here by John Fogg, who's the Vice President of Threat Intelligence Strategy at Trellix, about, you know, nation state interests over the years have exploited devices. But he's calling out that we need to strengthen collective resilience by requiring collaboration of security incidents instead of keeping everything quiet and closed doors and letting a whole heap of people get compromised. Which I agree with 100%.
Mm, 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 mm. Well, in this particular instance, you mean?
In all instances, to be honest, I think we need to have a very central sort of group. And I know there was startings of it years ago. Mandiant, Google, Microsoft, they all got together and went, well, let's share security data.
Hang on, didn't they have that in the US with the CVEs, and then the Trump administration shut that down?
Oh, did they?
we covered that story, yeah.
And then some people, they finally pulled some funding together to keep the CVE environment around. But
Because I know the EU's got a different one, like France stood one up.
Yeah,
but you know, let's have one global. And just put all of the data in it so that we can see what's going on. Another one that I found really interesting in this Hacker News page was the Google Pixel and Samsung devices found vulnerable to side channel attacks. An actor to covertly steal your 2FA codes. It's called pick snapping.
Right. Interesting.
Pick snapping.
But anyway, in the meantime, F5 have released updates for Big IP, F5 OS, Big IP for Kubernetes, Big IQ, and their APM clients. They've released updates, but the hackers, unless they've changed the entire code base, the hackers have still got a version of the source code. They're going to be able to look at that now and try and find 0 days in that. And they're called 0 days because no one knows that they're there.
Yeah.
And unless somehow F5 know about their own 0 days, which they wouldn't have 0 days if they knew that. You know what I mean? Like, what's releasing updates going to do if there's a 0 day in there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. They did actually call out in their press release, they called out, they have no knowledge of undisclosed critical or remote code execution vulnerabilities, except for the ones that were undisclosed vulnerabilities that are in the release
except for the ones they don't know about, right? With, therefore, 0 day. Yep. Like, yeah. So, yeah, they're going to have to – they're just going to have to start auditing their own code, like, from top to bottom.
Yeah, I really don't know how they publicly handle this because, like, yeah, you're not going to find – you're not going to find your own 0 days, generally. Like, yeah, okay, you've got – there's some very smart programmers out there who will, but generally you don't find your own 0 days until a hacker finds it and then you've got to address it. But
– unless they get Mandiant or CrowdStrike or someone like that to independently audit their code, because the code's out there now.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? It'd be the only way to do it.
Yep.
It's like proofreading your own work. You just skip over your own mistakes. You've got to give it to someone else, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to be, this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
All right. Well, maybe they're going to use AI to fix it. Let's get on with the AI war. First one here is Google Cloud CEO Thomas Kurian message to techies, AI will not take your jobs.
Well, that's a relief. Everything is fine, everyone.
Everything is fine. Nothing to see here.
Computers won't take your jobs either. I'm sure that's what they said in the 80s or 70s.
Well, it just transformed.
That's right. Like, that's exactly right.
Computers created a lot of jobs, if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, got rid of a small number of jobs and created an entirely different sector.
Exactly, yeah.
So one of the call-outs that Thomas Kurian said is, I think there's definitely a middle ground. He pointed to real-world evidence from Google's customer engagement suite, which is a collection of AI-powered customer service tools. Despite initial concerns from clients asking whether they would need fewer customer service agents, Kurian revealed that almost none of our clients have let anyone go. So maybe it will take some jobs. Maybe.
he's also reported there's been a 10% productivity boost among its engineers thanks to AI tools. It tracks the increase by measuring additional engineering capacity created in hours per week from AI-powered assistants. And I think my experience equates, like, aligns with that. It really does. I'd even go more than 10%. I'd even say it'd be more than 10%. When I'm doing something, the cognitive offload makes things a lot quicker and easier. And
definitely for repetitive tasks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It was interesting during Alphabet's recent earnings call, Sundar Pichai disclosed that over 30% of Google's new code is now AI generated, which is up from 25% in October. Mm. And Microsoft has announced that Copilot now writes 40% of code at Microsoft. So maybe they don't need that extra 15,000 staff that they laid off.
Well, the thing is, they're different. They're different staff, right? You know, this is a transformation, right? You laid off 15,000, but Pinchai here is saying that they're going to be hiring more engineers.
Yeah.
They do tend to cycle a bit.
Yeah, right? They do.
They clean out and then they use it. They go, they chop a bunch of trees down and plant a few new ones, right? It's
bringing people with different sets of skills as things move on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to definitely be an interesting space in a few years' time just to see what happens with it. My prediction is that it probably will get rid of a few jobs, but it will also create a whole new sector, much like it is at the moment with all the AI certs that are out there and agentic AI consulting companies that are prolific through the environment now.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be much like computers were in the 80s, where it will get rid of a small number of jobs and it will create a much bigger amount of jobs.
Yeah, right. Because my concern is how long before we get the input rot. Because, you know, right now the AI has learnt from, you know, Stack Overflow and GitHub, and that's all human generated code.
Mm.
Before long, it's all going to be AI generated code, and new models are going to be trained on AI generated code.
Oh yeah.
So you'll get the rot occurring.
Yeah, context rot will become a big thing. But I think by then, well, I'm hoping by then that the context rot issue might have been at least partially addressed. I think AI is getting, I hesitate to say more intelligent, but better at removing that rot as time goes on. Like, you remember when Bard first came out, and it would just talk complete garbage.
Oh, complete nonsense. It was hallucinate.
It would ask you, you'd ask it a question, and it'd give you two polar opposite answers. and one of them was blatantly wrong. ChatGPT did exactly the same thing. Every different LLM that was out there did exactly the same thing. And now we're in a state where Gemini can create videos that are indiscernible from real life.
Yeah. Yep. How long before videos become inadmissible as evidence? That's the question I've got.
Yeah, that's right. That's though I hadn't actually considered that, but yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Yep. We're not quite there yet because there are tells, but the next generation, boy.
Yeah. I got sent a video the other day. One of my mates sent me a video, and it was so blatantly AI generated because the mouth movements didn't match the words that were coming out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have a look at what VO3 can do these days, and everything about that video is nigh on perfect. Even like the lighting on the video that I got sent was so blatantly wrong. Like the shadows were wrong and the light was just not right at all. And then the mouth movements just gave it away. It was its final straw. But nowadays you have a look at what VO3 can do, and it is nigh on perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Depending on what's in the video, though, there are kind of tells, and it has this kind of aesthetic. If you're used to looking at VO3 videos, you'd pick it out.
Yeah.
Sort of the colouring, you know, and the angles, you know. I sent that little video too. I asked it to create a Lamborghini, you know, in the Tokyo Nights, and I have seen that black Lamborghini in other videos.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you ask VO3 to create a Lamborghini, that's the car it's going to make, right?
Yeah.
So there's tells like that.
Yeah, that's right. But it is interesting how good it's got in such a short amount of time. Like you think 12 months ago, you could barely string a few images together, let alone create an entire, like, 10-second video.
Yeah. But Macquarie Bank seemed to be using it.
All in Google Enterprise.
Yep.
All in Macquarie Bank on board with Google Gemini. Wants all employees using AI daily within 6 months.
And they've got 99% of their current employees have completed an online Gen AI training course, and a further 3,000 had attended Gemini Enterprise demos. That's pretty impressive.
99%. You didn't get 99% for anything.
No. 99% is a big number. Especially for a bank.
Yeah.
But it's interesting with Macquarie being that they are just a digital first bank. And so, like, I've got an account with them now, and it is a very different experience.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting, actually, the way they do things there. And they're picking up a huge amount of new mortgage work.
Yeah, right. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it was like 40% of new mortgages are going to Macquarie.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're really rapid, like turnarounds for approvals and things like that.
That's got to put some strain on their capital holdings, wouldn't it? Because you've got to hold a certain amount of capital for all the loans that you've put out there.
Yeah, but you can buy that from international, and then they also offer a very good deposit rate as well. So they've become one of the few banks that has like a high interest saving account that you don't need to do like silly things to be able to get the higher rate. Like there's a few of them was like, you can't have any withdrawals. They don't do that.
No.
Right.
Yeah, nice.
Hmm.
There you go. They haven't disclosed how much they're paying for Gemini Enterprise. But we know from previous articles that it's about $30 a month, US, US dollary dues. So, you know, I'm assuming they're getting some volume licensing discounts because
they probably built that in when they were doing their VMware engine cuts last week.
We'll pay you $2 a month.
So there you go. Head of technology, Richard Healy, said that the move would help the bank tackle increasing competitive pressures in the retail banking sector by increasing its agility to scale quickly and intelligently.
Hmm.
I mean, things like mortgage, as we're saying, you know, loan applications could sped up significantly. Just feed all the documents in and can just tell you, right? You don't have to, there's no manual sort of parsing of all of that information because you've got to hand over a lot of documentation when you do those things, right?
Yeah, and it's all data. And we know that the AI models that are out there are really good at parsing large amounts of data very quickly. So
yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
It is. And to finish off the show, we've got a list. Google Gemini 10 new AI product launches, programs, and news. Google unleashes a slew of new Gemini AI solutions and AI programs, including Google Skills, Gemini Enterprise, and a new AI agent finder tool. Here's 10 new products every partner and customer needs to know about. Now, let's quickly go through this. I didn't spend a lot of time on this yet. Google Vids.
Yeah. Well, Gemini Enterprise was the first one on that list because, well, you know, it's technically a new tool. But yeah, Vids. You can.
Oh, sorry, I skipped
that. Yeah, skipped it completely.
Google Gemini Enterprise. I did skip it completely. I just went next.
Yeah, next page. Google Vids can now transform one type of information. So you can feed it a presentation and it can give you an AI-generated video with a script and voiceover and everything done for you.
God,
yeah, we've given that a go internally. Mm. It hasn't quite scratched our itch for it just yet. We use another tool, which name escapes me right now, but you know, hopefully want to see Vids mature a bit more, give a bit more options for music and things like that. But.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another one in here, Google Meet now has real-time speech translation to all business customers.
Yeah, that's cool.
Really good.
Yep. I should flick it over to Japanese and see how I go.
AI agent finder for customers helps clients find, filter, and deploy AI agents that have been previously reviewed for security and interoperability. I hate that word because it's such a tongue twister to get out.
Interoperability, yes.
Yep.
The agents can then be purchased from Google Cloud Marketplace. Mm, nice.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Data science agent in Google Colab. Yep. So can automate data wrangling and ingestion.
Oh, that's good.
Mm.
What's it going to do? Set up some data flow jobs or?
So it says here it accelerates detailed data exploration, instantly finding patterns and streamlines complex model development by generating multi-step plans for training and inferencing.
Mm.
There you go.
Okay.
Next one. We covered this one earlier on. Cloud Skills Platform.
Yay.
So yeah, this one's really cool. It includes content from Google Cloud, Google DeepMind, Grow with Google, and Google for Education. So all under one banner now.
Yep. Yep.
Righto. So Agent Space. So Google Cloud's Agent Space is no more. It is now part of Gemini's Enterprise as the Workbench. So there you go.
Agent Space was a vision for agent-driven enterprises, focuses on powerful technology for building and orchestrating agents.
Yep. It's now just called the Workbench.
Where you go build your agents. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gemini Enterprise prices. Now, this really isn't a product launch or feature for Gemini is just how much it costs. The annual plans at $30 a seat US dollary dues, and the business plans start at $21 a seat in US dollars. Whatever that works out to be in Australian dollars, I have no idea at this point. Probably $45 Australian for enterprise, give or take.
Nice.
Next one on the list is the new agentic AI technologies for conversational AI. So part of the customer engagement squeak. Let's try that again. Part of the
squeak.
Sweet. Part of the customer's engagement suite, which focuses on conversational AI solutions. Google has unveiled several new features, which include low-code visual builders, where users can build out customer engagement agents once and then configure it for all channels, so telephony, web, mobile, email, and chat.
Mm-hmm.
So they also add new AI augmentation services and pre-built specialized agents to allow agent builders to build, test, deploy, and monitor agents faster.
Right. Would this be part of the, what's it called, call center as a service? Or
yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
Well, it's part of their customer engagement. So, quite possibly. And then Google has released Gear program. I read this and immediately thought of Gears of War. I was expecting to see the cogs there and I didn't, and I'm disappointed. It was a missed marketing opportunity, Google. So they've got their Gemini Enterprise Agent Ready program, which is designed to allow developers to build and deploy agents on Google's new agentic platform, which is Google Enterprise. That one should be a pretty cool one to have a look at. And then last one, again, not really a feature. It's how to sell Gemini Enterprise.
Okay.
It's a bit of an odd one to put in the list.
The feature is an odd one. Yeah.
I think old mate might have been running out of things to put in the list.
No ideas,
but Thomas Kurian spoke about how partners can sell Gemini Enterprise to various customers and departments, from sales and marketing to HR and finance. On the sales front, partners can offer Surface Account Intelligence. Surface account intelligence to personalize outreach or automate complex deal forecasting and pipeline management. For HR, they can automate candidate screening and personalize onboarding with AI agents.
That candidate screening with AI, I mean, there's a bit of backlash against that at the moment,
yep.
I have to say.
Yeah. And then on the finance front, automate financial processes like global consolidation and budget modeling, which, look, repetitive tasks, AI is really good at.
That makes sense, yeah. Yeah, and if you, number crunching huge spreadsheets and big databases, it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah, how to sell it, sure.
Sure.
That's a feature.
All right, and that's it with our list. We're done.
We are.
And that brings us to the end of the show.
Run away.
Well, guys, it's been a fantastic show this fortnight. Always good to catch up and shoot the breeze. Don't forget, for our listeners, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts, write a review. That really helps the show out. And while you're on YouTube, why don't you smash that like button and start the discussion there? You can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au. Find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And don't forget, today's sponsors are Hivetech Solutions. They've got a big, massive new 3D printer, apparently. Mm. Technofish Consulting, writing us some Go code, some module code, and Mantle Group. We do all the things, Google Cloud, AWS, and Azure as well. That's about it from us. Anything else from you guys?
Nah, I'm getting out of here.
Yep. Time to go.
Right. Excellent. We'll catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
One podcast, two podcasts.
I love exactly like that.
The song of the count, but they bleep every time he says count.
Yeah.